from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A San Francisco jury on Friday ordered the chemical giant Monsanto to pay $289 million to Dwayne Johnson, a school groundskeeper who claimed he contracted a deadly cancer from exposure to the weed killer. That's Roundup. And in 2016, the World Health Organization concluded that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, poses no cancer risk. But California includes glyphosate on its Proposition 65 list of chemicals, quote, probably carcinogenic to humans. We want to discuss in this segment the case and assess the risks posed by Roundup and other products that contain glyphosate. And joining us first is Helen Christofi. She's a legal affairs reporter who covers Bay Area courts for Courthouse News. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. And I guess the place to begin, since you were there, I know it was a highly emotional trial, is just to maybe give us an overview, but also what turned the corner for the plaintiff?
In terms of the verdict in his favor?
Yes.
It's hard to say because both sides presented competing versions or competing narratives of the results of the studies that were presented to the jury. And as an observer, it was very hard to tell what, each side presented a plausible narrative and then the other side rebutted it very effectively. But I believe the jury may have paid a lot of attention to one of the kidney studies done in mice that found three carcinomas in the kidneys, but it also found an adenoma in the control group. And so it was hard to interpret those results. And the EPA at the time, the study was done in the early 80s, the EPA at the time asked Monsanto to redo the study, and it didn't. And so the results have been hanging in the balance ever since.
There is, however, as you intimated, strong evidence from both sides that came forward. And in fact, there's over 800 scientific studies and reviews that there is not a cause of cancer from this pesticide, and specifically non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's really never been proven, has it?
It's hard to say because, again, both sides presented these competing narratives and both sides had very good arguments for it does cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and it does not cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so at this point, for me at least as an observer, it's very hard to parse through all of those competing studies, competing results. It may have been different for the jury because, as I understand it, some of the jury members have scientific backgrounds. So it may have been easier for them to parse through those results and come to a conclusion in favor of Mr. Johnson.
But this was, as I indicated before, this is a case that was really very emotional. This is a man who was obviously facing death. They had to expedite the trial because he's at death's door here. And he's a man who has suffered a great deal. That must have played a part, didn't it?
Perhaps. Throughout the trial, the jury was very just unemotional, very straight-faced, poker-faced. You could tell they were really taking in the information, considering it carefully, taking notes. They had, most of the jury members had several notebooks full of notes. And it was just very hard to tell. Even when Mr. Johnson himself testified, they didn't show much emotion. But at the end, right after the verdict was read, several of the jury members were tearing up, and one member in particular was crying. So it was very emotional for them throughout the trial. And then finally, at the end, they were able to sort of express their emotions.
And what about Monsanto as a target? I mean, do you think that played into this ultimate decision? Because the decision was not only that it causes cancer in Mr. Johnson, or did cause cancer, but a failure of Monsanto to warn consumers. Both of those were agreed to by the jury. And I'm wondering at this point if there's certainly a lot of ill will that many people feel about Monsanto, not only because of GMOs, but many other things as well.
Right. I'm I'm not sure if that played a role. Both parties tried very hard during jury selection to select jurors who could be impartial and not let personal opinions influence, against Monsanto, influence the verdict. And I have seen some complaints on social media about the jury having found for Mr. Johnson because of prejudices against Monsanto. And I just don't believe that's fair because, the jury, we don't know how the jury interpreted those results in the end. We'd have to talk to the jury members themselves. And they also had, it was a 12-person jury. They had 12 people to be able to discuss those results and come to their conclusions. And so to say that there were prejudices involved or that they were just liberal San Franciscans who automatically found in favor of Mr. Johnson's, I don't believe that's fair.
Helen Christofi, again, is a legal affairs reporter. She covers Bay Area courts for Courthouse News. And pleased to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And now we have Scott Patridge with us. He's vice president of Monsanto. And Scott Patridge, good to have you with us. Thank you for joining the Forum program.
Thank you, Michael, and good morning to you and your listeners.
And good morning to you. Well, I'm inclined to ask you the obvious question. This is going to be appealed, although an appeal gets very expensive, doesn't it?
Well, but that's not the issue here, Michael. First, I have to say, this whole experience for those involved, and Mr. Johnson in particular, suffering from cancer. My heart goes out to Mr. Johnson. I know that everyone who has met him has sympathy for him, and I wish him the best. I had cancer in my family. I know what it can do to a family, and I know Mr. Johnson is looking for answers. But, glyphosate is not the cause of his disease, and it does not cause cancer. I think there's overwhelming evidence to that effect. We obviously, the Monsanto group, did not do a good job of swaying the jury in that regard. But this verdict doesn't change the fact that glyphosate products such as our Roundup has been used. Glyphosate products have been used extensively for over four decades of safe use throughout the globe. It is the most widely used herbicide in the world. It is the most studied herbicide in the world. It has been the subject of over 800 medical, scientific, peer-reviewed studies over those 40-plus years, not a single one of which associates glyphosate with adverse health effects, much less cancer.
Well, I know Monsanto put out a statement that it's been 40 years of safe use, and, that's a track record that is out there for the public, and we're talking really about one of the probably the world's most widely used herbicide, period. But what about what Mr. Johnson's lawyer said about didn't jurors see internal company documents that actually Monsanto has for decades kind of kept Roundup and the possibility of link to cancer or glyphosate out of the public eye?
No, that's not accurate. And what the lawyers did for the plaintiffs, and they did a very effective job, obviously, is they cherry-picked documents and took them out of context and used statements in those documents without providing the context that actually, I think, really upset the jury. This is a very emotional case. You cannot help but have emotion from what Mr. Johnson is going through. But there were three instances in particular of misconduct by plaintiff's counsel that the judge took very seriously, admonished plaintiff's counsel, entertained motions for mistrial, and the judge herself even referred to the evidence that was put forward as very thin. So this unfortunately, the science didn't resonate with this jury. And on post-trial motions and on appeal, we're certainly going to highlight that the plaintiff did not carry their burden of proof here, and that the overwhelming science and the safe use of glyphosate, not to mention the fact that it's been regulated and reviewed by authorities such as the EPA and in Europe, ECHA, EFSA, similar authorities in Germany, Japan, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, all around the globe have looked at this science, have looked at science about glyphosate over and over and over again, and every single one of those agencies has found over the past 40-plus years that it's safe to use and does not cause cancer.
Could you say something, though, Mr. Partridge, could you say something about the World Health Organization saying back in 2015 that it is probably carcinogenic? That was the International Agency for Research on Cancer that's part of the WHO.
Yeah, and actually, Michael, the WHO itself has found that glyphosate is not a carcinogen. So the parent of IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer out of Lyon, France, the World Health Organization has itself said glyphosate is safe and it is not a carcinogen. The IARC out of France, they rendered an opinion in 2015 after doing no testing whatsoever. They had a five-day conference in which they discussed five substances, one of which was glyphosate, and they rendered the opinion that glyphosate was probable human carcinogen. And there are two points I'd like to make here. One,
well, let me back up with you just for a minute, though, because the IARC said it is cancerous. WHO said it is not.
Yes, no, they did. The IARC said they rendered the opinion it is a probable human carcinogen. The World Health Organization said it is absolutely not a carcinogen. And the two points I'd like to make, Michael, are IARC, we now know that an individual named Mr. Chris Portier, who was instrumental in influencing the IARC process on glyphosate, he's been on the payroll of plaintiff's lawyers who have brought suit against Monsanto in the United States. I think your listeners also need to know that IARC is the outfit that has rendered over 1,000 opinions on substances, everything from red meat to working overtime to coffee, and have found in every single instance except one, they have rendered the opinion that those substances warrant a higher risk of cancer. The only instance in which they rendered an opinion that a substance does not cause cancer, it regards the substance that's used to make yoga pants. Otherwise, every single thing they render an opinion on, they find is a cancer-causing agent. That's who IARC is.
Hi, we're talking to Scott Partridge, and Vice President Partridge, it's good to have you with us. I thank you for being with us.
Michael, thank you for your time, and I appreciate time with your listeners, too.
And I think just before I let you go, you are going to appeal this, I take it.
Absolutely, we're going to appeal it. It's too important.
When? When would the appeal go?
It's too important a product, too.
Okay, again, Scott Partridge is Vice President of Monsanto, and we'll say goodbye to him and welcome a couple of other people into this discussion. We're discussing the risks of Roundup. David Eastman is joining us. David Eastman is professor and toxicologist in the Department of Molecular Cell and Systems Biology at the University of California, Riverside. And Professor Eastman, good to have you aboard here. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Also want to welcome Jennifer Sass, who is senior scientist with Natural Resources Defense Council. She's also a lecturer at George Washington University. And welcome, Jennifer Sass. Do we have Jennifer Sass? Okay, we're going to try to connect with her. David Eastman, you just heard the vice president of Monsanto pretty much in agreement with him in terms of the way he laid it out?
For the most part, I would disagree with some of his conclusions on IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer. IARC is actually a well-respected organization, and they have reviewed many chemicals. The challenge is the reason they've only concluded one chemical is not carcinogenic is because you're basically trying to prove a negative, and they can't do that. So a large number of those chemicals, they basically said there's insufficient evidence to make a determination. But the chemicals they review are also those that are suspected of causing cancer. So, you know, it's the fact that they conclude that quite a few of these chemicals cause cancer is based upon what they're reviewing.
But that has a certain kind of complexity to it and maybe even ambiguity to it. I mean, the lawyer in the case was comparing it, for example, to lung cancer. We know that cigarettes and tobacco do cause lung cancer, but we also know that many people who don't smoke at all get lung cancer. I mean, it's difficult to prove in an incontrovertible way is really what I'm suggesting, isn't it?
No, that's correct. If I might explain a little bit, in March of 2015, IARC met and concluded that glyphosate was a probable human carcinogen. This triggered all sorts of agencies throughout the world to re-review glyphosate, and one of those was the World Health Organization, of which IARC is a part. And so I served as one of the panel members on a panel which is, it goes by the acronym JMPR, the Joint Meeting on Pesticide Residues. And so we reviewed basically all the evidence that IARC had reviewed, plus we reviewed a lot more evidence because IARC only restricted their review to publicly available studies, where we had access to not only the publicly available studies, but all of the studies which were performed according to international guidelines for regulatory submission for pesticide registration. And so we reviewed all of those studies as well, and it was hundreds of studies, I might indicate. I mean, I personally reviewed several hundred studies in certain areas. And we did not find the evidence convincing that glyphosate caused cancer. Clearly, there's some conflicting things here and there. But in the epidemiology, you have some studies that suggest it may cause non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But there's a cohort study of 50,000 farm workers, and they have seen no evidence at all in that study, which is conducted by the National Cancer Institute, of any association with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Professor Eastman, let me interrupt here because I want to get Jennifer Sass on here.
Okay, sure.
And Jennifer Sass, I believe we now have you on, do we?
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You're pretty much convinced that there is a link to cancer. Tell us why.
Well, I've also reviewed all the studies, but really IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, did follow its own protocols and own guidelines and had a meeting with experts from around the world that came together. They reviewed all the science. Dr. Eastman is correct, but I want to point out some critical differences between the processes of JMPR and IARC. Both of them are part of the World Health Organization, so your Monsanto representative mischaracterized the World Health Organization's conclusions. In fact, JMPR, it doesn't see a link with cancer, but that's because they did a risk assessment, and a risk assessment looks at exposure as well, whereas IARC did only a hazard assessment. It's sort of like a thumbs up, thumb down on cancer. Does it cause cancer? And then later, they'll presumably be a proper risk assessment by regulatory agencies to look at how much exposure might raise the risk of cancer by how much, more of a quantitative estimate. So those are very different.
But there were regulatory agencies that all approved. Approved, really, of this up and down the line, weren't there?
All the regulatory agencies did not a hazard assessment, but a risk assessment, and which is, again, looking, trying to take into account exposure. In other words, they're not just looking at whether it causes cancer or not, but how potent it is or how strong of a carcinogen, which IARC didn't do. And the agencies that did that, both JMPR and here in the U.S., US EPA, both of them essentially put much more weight on the industry-sponsored studies than on other studies that were available, whereas IARC reviews the publicly available literature.
All right, Jennifer Sass, if I could, I'd like to at this point invite our listeners to join in, and I do want to hear from you and want to hear your thoughts about this. We're discussing the risks of Roundup with David Eastman, who's professor and toxicologist, Department of Molecular Cell and Systems Biology, UC Riverside, and Jennifer Sass, senior scientist with the NRDC, the National Resources Defense Council, and also a lecturer at George Washington. If you'd like to weigh in here, we'd like to hear what you have to say, or if you have questions, join us now at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your involvement, so please feel free to join us now. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. Or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but we do want to hear from you. We'll try to get to you, as many of you as we can, in the time remaining. It's kind of, in some ways, though, if I go back to you, Jennifer, says impossible, one could argue, to prove. The burden of proof would be on the plaintiff, but in this case, they only had to prove a kind of sustainable contributing factor to the illness, and that won the day. But we're also talking about, cancer, which it's often idiopathic. I mean, in terms of going right to the heart of what causes cancer, the majority of lymphoma, for example, are idiopathic. Let me hear what you have to say about that.
Sure. I mean, it's on two points, and one, the larger one is, first of all, that the person has cancer, and then that they have the type of cancer that IARC linked to to exposure to glyphosate-based products, including like Roundup, and that there was a failure to warn as well, so that Monsanto really hid a lot of this information about the cancers for a long time, that these studies were mostly Monsanto studies, even the ones that IARC reviewed.
You heard the vice president of Monsanto pretty much say that that was not the case, that they didn't hide it, yeah?
Well, they came more recently. They came into the public realm when IARC did its review in 2015. Now, up until then, they'd been submitted to the regulatory agencies, but they weren't in public dockets. And the other, so the failure to warn, failure to make that public, failure to have those assessed is part of what the case looks at. As well, when IARC did their assessment, they linked it to these specific types of cancers based on the rodent studies that they looked at, and those were the type of cancers that the people in the lawsuits have.
All right, I do want to get to our callers, and there are a lot of them, so let's begin with Hugh, who joins us from Oakland. Hugh, you're on the air.
I wanted to ask what amounts the studies are talking about. For example, does that mean one can swim in Roundup and it's never going to cause cancer? I mean, it's killing plants, so obviously it can kill something. And there's a difference between if one applies it according to the directions or an accident happens like in Mr. Johnson's case. So
it's an important question, Hugh, because it may be swimming in our waterways. But let me get David Eastman to respond to you.
Sure. The animal cancer studies, and there are actually a lot of them, which we reviewed all of them. We have access to the original studies, which IARC did not. But in the studies where it looked like there may have been some evidence of sort of reproducible or consistent types of cancers, the doses where those were seen were really, really high. So these are roughly 5,000 milligrams per kilogram body weight per day. So in human terms, that's somewhere between almost approximating eating a pound of pure glyphosate per day for several years. I mean, these were really, really whopping doses. And that's why we tended to discount their relevance with regards to pesticide residues that are found at really low concentrations in the diet.
Let me thank the caller. Go, you, Jennifer Sass. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I agree with what you're laying out, Dr. Eastman, but just to point out that in addition, there's only so many rats in each dose. And so when you extrapolate it across a population, you need to, that's why they use high doses. They use high doses because you only have 25 or 50 rats, sometimes less. And so if you have a cancer that's going to cause, say, 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 100 people are going to get it, you need to look at a dose that's much higher in order to make it cause the number of rats that are going to get it in the reduced number of rats in your study. So that's why studies are all set up at higher doses and to use lesser animals, as you understand, I know. But in addition, I want to point out one of the criticisms of the IARC process was this idea that there was some influencing of the decision by Dr. Portier, which the Monsanto representative pointed out. I want to point out that we have also internal emails from Monsanto that they had a representative at that IARC meeting, Tom Sorahan. He was an observer at the IARC working group and attended everything all the way through the meeting, and afterwards wrote to one of his colleagues in an email that's become a public that said that it was handled very professionally and that he has no concerns. And he continues to take that point. And every other person on the panel also says that there was not undue influence influencing the decision in any way in any direction. So the only people that believe that now are the Monsanto representatives, not even the Monsanto representative that was at the IARC meeting.
All right, let me go to another caller. Catherine, you're on with us. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much. My questions are on the reliance of corporate data, Monsanto's data, to make regulatory decisions, and Monsanto's aggression against some scientists that have done public interest science. And if you could talk a little bit about that and the implications for that when it comes to regulatory decisions, as well as my concern that if something is a known carcinogen and there are other ways of dealing with problems, why aren't we taking a more precautionary approach when this is one of the most widely used chemicals in the world and looking for other solutions and putting pause on something that we know causes cancer?
Yeah, an important question. And actually, I'm looking at a question from another listener named Bill, which dovetails. And let me go to you on this, Jennifer Sass. He says, why is glyphosate Roundup still in use while its effects are in dispute?
Well, again, I think what we need from the human health perspective is we need a proper assessment, and it needs to be a proper risk assessment. It should be called a carcinogen. It's gone through that process. There's data to show it. But as Dr. Eastman correctly points out, dose will make a difference, and what they should be doing is a proper assessment for risk. But here's the issue. They don't really know what people are exposed to because Monsanto's been hiding the information and telling everybody it's safe for so long. The regulatory agencies have not been testing it in food or drinking water. So we don't really know what people are exposed to. But it's likely that there is no unexposed population in the country because of how widely it's used, as your caller correctly points out. The other issue is it's used paired with these GMO crops that are specifically able to tolerate or resist the pesticide, the herbicide. And because of that, this idea is that it's, you know, it can be used safely, you can use as much as you want, you should douse it all over your crops and fields because your seed of interest, your corn or your soy, will be safe. And then it'll kill all the weeds. But what's happening is we keep using more and more because of all the resistance from the weeds. The weeds are becoming resistant to this. So just this whole idea of continuously dumping more and more chemical on the fields because it's being paired with these chemically resistant seeds is, I think, a real problem.
Yeah, and an important point you're making. I should mention also that in the trial they brought up the synergy of glyphosate and Roundup working together. I wanted to make sure that was... Could I go back to you, Professor Eastman, though, and get some response before we wrap this up, because we're coming to the end of the hour?
Certainly. The joint meeting on pesticide residues that I was part of involves experts from the World Health Organization, but also experts from the Food and Agriculture Organizations. And they had lots and lots of residue data of glyphosate residues in all sorts of crops throughout the world. And those tended to be very, very low. So there is certainly quite a bit of residue data that's out there. And so we know certainly that. Now, there may be other exposures to glyphosate we're not so familiar with. And like any pesticide, it's wise to use sort of protective measures when you use pesticides. You should be wearing gloves. You should be wearing clothing and not applying these things with short-sleeve shirts or in shorts, etc.
We're going to have to leave it there. Let me thank Dr. David Eastman, professor from University of California, Riverside, and Jennifer Sass, lecturer at George Washington and senior scientist for the Natural Resources Defense Council. When we come back, we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.